Hello everyone and welcome to Usual Disclaimer with Eleanor Neal, a true crime podcast where we crack open some of the most notorious cases in history. Given the topics that we'll be investigating, it goes without saying that this show comes with a content warning. The details can get a bit heavy and you might find some of the themes we discuss triggering. Listener discretion is strongly advised and check the description for some resources and further information. I just want to give my usual disclaimer that I mean absolutely no disrespect to anyone that I talk about in this video. This is all just information that I have found on the internet and I'm compiling into one video. So Tim McLean was a 22-year-old man born on October 3rd, 1985 in Manitoba in Canada. Tim was a very active person, he was very athletic, he loved sports, he loved adventures, he loved going out travelling and doing new things, being very spontaneous in that way. Tim was very, very outgoing, he was very social, loved to make friends, he could get on with anyone, and he was generally just very liked throughout his life, everyone that met him. So in the summer of 2007, Tim's friend Tiffany rang him up and said, like, what are your plans for the summer? Have you got a job? Are you going travelling? What are you doing this summer? And Tim just kind of said he didn't really have anything planned. And so Tiffany just said on the phone to him, pack a bag for at least a week. They could be gone for more than a week, but they're just gonna go. They're just gonna go off somewhere and do something over the summer. They didn't have a plan. It was very spontaneous. So the two of them just kind of set off. Like I said, they didn't have a plan at all. And then they found a traveling carnival, a carnival that traveled all the way around Canada. And they thought, perfect, let's both get jobs here. We'll travel around Canada all summer. We'll meet a bunch of people our age. It'll be really fun working at this carnival. And so they both got jobs. And Tim really had a talent for working at this carnival. Like I said, he was a very outgoing person. And so being with the public all day really put him in his element. And then in the evenings, they had like wild parties. They'd all get drunk every night. And it just seemed like a really fun summer. And the two of them loved it so much that they just kind of stayed with them after summer. And they ended up being with this carnival for a full year, just traveling all over Canada. So eventually in the following summer of 2008, Tim turned 22 years old and he decided it was probably time for him to settle down. He wanted to move to British Columbia in Canada. He wanted a permanent house, a permanent job. And he wanted to find a girlfriend and maybe start a family within the next few years. He decided that traveling wasn't really for him anymore. And then in the end of July of 2008, the carnival was getting ready to move again. It moved like once every couple of months. And this time it was moving from Edmonton to Regina. And so Tim decided that this was perfect timing for him to leave the carnival. So instead of following the carnival to Regina, he was just gonna go home to Winnipeg. The distance from where the carnival was in Edmonton and where Tim's parents lived in Winnipeg, where he was wanting to travel to, was a huge distance. It was either a 24-hour bus journey or a 2-hour plane ticket. Everyone that worked at the carnival didn't really have a lot of money either because they just kind of spent it as they were going on drinks and stuff. Like I said, they were partying every night, so no one really had a lot of money. But still, Tim's carnival friends all said that they would put together and try and afford a plane ticket for him to go back to Winnipeg. But Tim didn't really care. He didn't mind taking the 24-hour Greyhound bus all the way to Winnipeg. He'd done long journeys before and honestly, he didn't really want people to spend their money on him. So at 1 minute past midnight on July 30th, 2008, Tim McLean boarded the 1170 bus to Edmonton. Tim took a seat towards the back of the bus as he normally did. He sat two rows in front of the toilets and he began his 24-hour journey back to Winnipeg. And this bus had several different stops on its way to Winnipeg, but it was at one of the last stops where things took a turn. At 6:55 p.m. the following day, Tim had been on the bus for nearly 17 hours, and he really wasn't that far from home when the bus stopped in Erickson in Manitoba. So a bunch of passengers got on, but the bus really wasn't that full to the point where people had to sit next to each other yet, so everyone just kind of had their own seat rows. Tim was asleep at this point, right at the back of the bus, and most people, as they were getting on this bus, would fill it up from the front, so he wasn't really disturbed at all at this point, he just stayed asleep. After a couple of hours, the bus stopped again at another city for a meal break, and Tim just kind of got off, got himself some food, and then got back on the bus. But when the passengers reboarded, one of the passengers that had got on at Erickson a couple of hours ago decided to relocate seats. This man was originally sat relatively close to the front of the bus when he first got on, but this time he grabbed his things from the seat that he was at before and started to walk up the aisle, and he was analysing every single person as he went up. This man was a middle-aged looking Chinese man with a shaved head. He was tall and he was wearing sunglasses the whole time. And this man walked all the way to the back of the bus up to where Tim McLean was sitting, and Tim was the only person on the bus to have actually acknowledged him, to say like, hi, how are you doing, whatever. And so even though the bus was half empty, this man could have sat by himself in his own seat and had a bit more space. He decided to sit next to Tim McLean. Anyway, Tim didn't think much of it and he just kind of fell back asleep with his head against the window. Whereas the passenger that had just sat next to him started to act really weirdly, according to other passengers. This guy was constantly holding a roll of toilet roll, and he never put it down once on the whole bus journey. He was also holding a 2-litre bottle of iced tea, and he kept drinking from it, but obviously he needed two hands to undo the bottle. And so every time he would undo the bottle, he would just tuck this toilet roll underneath his chin, use both his hands, and then take the toilet roll back out. He wouldn't once, like, put it down at all. So on a bus, you have, like, the aisle, and then you've got two rows of seats either side. So say Tim and this guy were sat on this side. The people that were sat on this side of the aisle, completely opposite, noticed some really weird behaviours from this guy. After about half an hour, this guy began rocking backwards and forwards and chanting something under his breath, but in a different language. It wasn't in English, so no one really understood. At this point, it was about 8 p.m. and it was dark outside, and the bus didn't have its lights on so that people could sleep if they wanted to sleep. Obviously, it was going to be an overnight journey. And so the only kind of light on this bus was coming from TV sets that were kind of above the chairs for people to watch this film on. But even though the bus was very, very dark, there was no lights on, this guy kept his sunglasses on the whole time. And then all of a sudden at about 8:20 p.m, the people that were sat on the same row as Tim McLean and this passenger saw this guy get out a knife. It was a proper hunting knife. It had like a covering on it. He took the covering off, turned to his right, and began stabbing Tim McLean. So the man on that same aisle saw the stabbing begin and jumped up and started shouting to the bus driver, "Stop the bus, someone's being stabbed." Immediately, everyone on the bus started screaming, shouting, crying, people were throwing up. They were running to the front of the bus to try and get off, but obviously this bus was on the highway. It didn't have anywhere to go. Obviously at this point, Tim had woken up, he was aware of what was happening, he was being stabbed by this stranger and he was screaming. And people said that those screams are the most disturbing thing they've ever heard. Tim tried to escape his attacker, but the only way that he could really get out was by going over him and then down the aisle, because obviously there were chairs in front and behind him. And so he tried to do exactly that. He tried to jump over his attacker, but fell into the aisle where he laid while his attacker continued to stab him. By the time the bus actually managed to pull over, Tim must have been stabbed about 50-60 times and he was still screaming. But this guy wasn't slowing down, he wasn't stopping, he seemed just in a psychotic rage. So the man that alerted the bus driver, the man that was sat on Tim's row, went back to rescue his girlfriend, and then he noticed three more people sat behind Tim, and obviously they were trapped behind him and his attacker. It was an elderly woman, her son, and his wife. And so this guy and his wife then tried to help these three people climb over the seats to be able to run off the bus. So quickly, everyone except from Tim and his attacker ran off the bus, and the bus driver locked the bus and immobilized it so that no one could drive it anywhere. The attacker couldn't drive it. And they were all just kind of stood outside on the highway, and everyone was panicking, crying, throwing up. People were having fits. Like, it was a very traumatic experience for everyone on that bus. And at the same time, a truck driver named Chris Aldwyer was driving along that same highway when he noticed that this bus had pulled over and everyone around it seemed very frantic. And so as he was driving past this bus, he kind of rolled his window down to ask what was going on. And then a woman shouted to him, "Come help, someone's being stabbed to death on this bus." So Chris pulled over his truck by the bus. He went into the back and picked up a really heavy metal bar and then went with the bus driver and another male passenger to go and confront this attacker. They got onto the front of the bus and they just kind of stood at the end of the aisle watching this attacker stabbing Tim McLean to death. At this point, they knew that there was nothing that they could do. He must have been stabbed way over 100 times, and even if they tried to stop this attacker, Tim still wouldn't survive. The attacker actually stopped stabbing Tim McLean for a couple of seconds just to look up at these men. He didn't say a single word to them. He was just very expressionless. And the truck driver described his expression as empty. The men all just kind of stood at the front of the bus, just completely frozen with fear, with shock, with trauma. They were watching one man stab another man to death. But the attacker, even though these men had weapons, didn't seem to be very scared of them or threatened or anything. He just kind of moved to the other side of Tim, knelt over him and began beheading him. And the men, like I said, were just frozen. They didn't try and leave the bus, they didn't try and stop this man, like they couldn't move. And then the attacker had finished beheading Tim, and with his head in one hand and a knife in the other, he began heading towards the other men. And so at this point, the adrenaline kind of kicked in with the men and they realised there was no point in trying to fight this attacker. There were people outside, including children, that needed protecting. And so they decided to run off the bus and try and barricade the door as well as they could. They wouldn't really gain anything by trying to physically stop the attacker. There was no one left on the bus that he could hurt now. Yes, he could further destroy Tim's body, but no one's life was at risk anymore. There was no one left on the bus. And so they decided to protect these other people's lives first. Obviously, at this point, police had been called, but because this was in the middle of the highway, it was taking them a little while to get there. The attacker then kind of calmly walked up to the door that the men were barricading. He didn't try and attack them, he didn't try and get out or anything. He just kind of displayed the head to them and the knife, and then just kind of walked back onto the bus, back over to Tim's body. This man was just kind of marching up and down the aisle of the bus with Tim's head, just displaying it to all the passengers of the bus, displaying it to passing cars, like it was some kind of like trophy. And by now some police had arrived, but they weren't doing anything yet. They were waiting for a full SWAT team and some kind of orders. As they were waiting, the attacker actually went back over to Tim McLean's body and began severing different pieces off and eating them. And this went on for another 4 hours. For 4 hours, the police and the SWAT team were outside, they were watching this going on, but they were just kind of waiting. They did have a strategy, but it just wasn't to stop this man yet. They concluded that this man must be in some kind of psychotic rage, some kind of episode that he was gonna eventually snap out of. And so the longer they kept him inside this bus, the longer he had to calm down, and the more likely he was to go easily to the police station rather than them having to wrestle him and possibly kill him. And so the longer they waited before actually trying to approach this man, the longer he had to kind of calm down and to snap out of this mindset. Otherwise he might try and kill someone else when they were trying to get him out. Who knows what he might try and do if he wasn't calm. At one point the murderer did even sit in the driver's seat of the bus and tried to drive it away, but like I said, the bus driver had put on the immobiliser. And thank God that they've actually got those, because if they didn't, this guy could have just driven this bus and this dead body and possibly killed other people, gotten into a car crash or something. No one knows if he could actually drive. After a couple of hours, all the passengers that were on the side of the road had been transported to police stations, along with some of the police officers that had been there since the very beginning, because they were also equally as traumatised as the other passengers. Finally, at 1:30 a.m. the next morning, so 5 hours after the attack on Tim McLean began, the murderer then tried to break one of the back windows and escape. And so he was shot twice with a taser gun, wrestled to the ground where he was handcuffed, and then taken to the police station. So forensic teams were immediately on the scene and they found bits of Tim McLean's body scattered all over this bus. Immediately the next morning, this story was worldwide news. It was on every single news channel because it was so horrific. You never expect anything like this to ever go on. But at the same time, Tim McLean's body still hadn't been identified. Obviously, it was in a very bad physical condition, and so identifying it was going to be pretty hard. And so his family didn't know, the news reports weren't saying any names, they were just kind of saying a young white male because they couldn't tell how old he was, he didn't have any identification on him. His mother Carol got up for work that morning, she worked at a senior citizens home, she was a chef there, and as she was getting ready she put the news on and heard this story about her son being killed, but didn't know it was her son at the time. So Carol went to work, and then she said at around lunchtime she suddenly started getting a really bad feeling, like a pit in her stomach, but she just kind of dismissed it thinking Tim was already in Winnipeg. So like I said, Carol was a chef at this senior citizens home and she'd cooked them a meal, and all day they were watching the news, keeping updated with this news report. And right before they ate this meal that Carol cooked for them, they said grace and decided to do a prayer for the family of the victim that had been killed on that bus, not knowing that the mother of the victim was in that room praying for herself and for her own family. Once they'd finished praying, Carol actually turned to one of the senior citizens and said, "Wow, that could have been my son. My son was scheduled to come on a bus at that exact time, that exact route from Edmonton to Winnipeg. It could have easily been my son." Tim was expected to be at his dad and stepmom's house for dinner that night, and so his father, also Tim McLean, decided to go out and get Tim's favourite meal, which was fried chicken. So he went out to get this food, and when he got back, all of Tim's friends were outside his house, but Tim wasn't there, and they all looked very serious. And so they asked Tim Senior if he'd heard what happened, and Tim said, "No, what do you mean, what's happened to what?" And they said to Tim, and immediately Tim McLean's heart sunk. He had a really bad feeling and he said, "No, I haven't heard anything." And so Tim's friends all took his father into the house and sat him down. They sat him down in front of his computer and put up the first news page that they could find, and it was the murder on the Greyhound bus. At this point, the news believed that they had identified Tim McLean because his ID was on that bus, but they just had to check that it wasn't anyone else's first. And so at 7:30 that night, Tim's father phoned his mother, Carol, and just confirmed that the person that was murdered on that bus was in fact their son, Tim McLean. Back at the police station, the murderer was identified. He was 41-year-old Vincent Lee, a Chinese immigrant with three different jobs. And so police made Vincent Lee change out of his clothes so that they could be used as evidence. And when they did, they found Tim McLean's ear, nose and tongue in his pocket. Whereas Tim's eyes and a bit of his heart have never been found. And so it's believed that Vincent Lee ate those along with just a lot of his kind of flesh around his body. And so during his questioning, Vincent Lee took the police through the whole story of the murder, starting 24 hours before he even met Tim McLean. So Vincent Lee actually took the exact same bus route that Tim McLean was going to take that day, but 24 hours earlier. So from Edmonton to Winnipeg, he just took the one 24 hours before. Vincent Lee actually lived in Winnipeg, which was the final stop on the bus journey, just like Tim McLean was going to do the next day. However, for some reason, he got off the bus early, 8 hours early, in Erickson. And he paid for a ticket all the way to Winnipeg, which was a reasonable price difference between Erickson and Winnipeg. So it was clear that he had the intention of going all the way there, but decided kind of last minute to get off early. But the thing about Vincent Lee was that he was actually an undiagnosed schizophrenic, and he would hear voices in his head that he believed was God ordering him to do different things, including getting off the bus early in Erickson. A few days prior to this, the voice had told Vincent that someone was going to try and kill him at some point, and so Vincent needed to buy a knife to defend himself, and that was ultimately the knife that he used to kill Tim McLean. Anyway, the voice told Vincent Lee to get off that bus in Erickson, and so he did, and as soon as he got off, he just sat on a bench and awaited his next orders from this voice in his head. So while Vincent was sat on this bench waiting for the next orders from the voice in his head, he began acting really strangely. At one point, a truck passed in front of his bench a little bit slower than a normal car would go, and so Vincent whipped out his knife and was about to kill these truck drivers. But obviously the truck was moving, and so by the time Vincent got his knife out, the truck was gone, and so he didn't end up killing them. Vincent stayed sat on this bench waiting for an order all night. Witnesses saw him still there, sat bolt upright with his eyes wide open at 3 a.m. He didn't get any sleep. The next morning, Vincent got out a laptop from his bag and attached a sign to it saying, "For sale for $600. He just kind of set this laptop out in front of him and waited to see if anyone would come up and buy this laptop. And he never gave a reason why he did this. He didn't say that the voice ordered him to, he just kind of did it. And so a 16-year-old boy that worked across the road from where Vincent was sat on this bench saw this guy and his laptop as he was walking past. And as he was walking past, Vincent asked him if he wanted to buy this laptop. And so the boy actually read the sign and he said, "Oh no, sorry, I don't have $600. So then Vincent said, "Well, do you want it for 60? And obviously this boy said yes, it was a pretty good condition laptop for $60. And so he took it. And that was the only time he ever spoke to a single person in Erickson. He'd been there for 24 hours, sat on this bench without a wink of sleep, and the voice still hadn't given him another order. So instead of waiting there still for another order from The Voice, Vincent just decided to get on the next bus to Winnipeg, which was the bus route 24 hours after his original one, which ended up being the one that Tim McLean was on. So like I said, Vincent originally sat towards the front of the bus by himself, and then after about an hour at the next stop, he decided to relocate and sit next to Tim McLean. He never actually gave a reason why he chose Tim McLean. People believe it was because he was the only one to acknowledge him, but no one really knows why Tim McLean specifically. And then at about 8:20 p.m, Vincent said he heard The Voice again for the first time in over 24 hours, and it was God telling him to kill Tim McLean, and so he did it. So after he'd killed Tim McLean, Vincent said that The Voice then told him that he had to dismember and dispose of the body, otherwise Tim would come back to life and kill him. And so he says that was why he ate it, because if he ate the body, it wouldn't be able to come back alive. Obviously, he couldn't dispose of it any other way. He was locked on a bus, so he ate it. Straight away, it was very clear that there was probably some form of mental illness with Vincent Lee. This is not normal human behaviour to kill a stranger and then cannibalise them. And so Vincent was assessed and finally diagnosed with schizophrenia at the age of 41. However, it's believed that he had been suffering with it since about the age of 20. He would tell psychiatrists all the time that God is evil, and because Vincent is evil too, God liked him and God wanted him to carry out his murders for him. Vincent also said that God specifically chose Tim McLean to be the victim as well. Although he didn't know why God wanted Tim McLean to be the victim, it was just his choice. So Vincent expected and wanted to be executed for his crimes. He said that God wanted him to die now that he'd carried out these crimes, and he felt like that was a suitable punishment for himself. However, Canada doesn't do the death penalty. Vincent would repeatedly tell psychiatrists that God wants him to die, God needs Vincent to die, and if no one else will do it for him, he will kill himself. Eventually, Vincent was found not criminally responsible for this murder due to the degree of his mental illness. It was really bad to the point where he just did not have any kind of grasp on reality and what was acceptable and what wasn't. In that moment, Vincent really believed that if he didn't kill Tim McLean, he himself would be killed by God. And so he was just acting accordingly. It was like a kill or be killed situation for him. Instead of going to a prison and doing prison time, Vincent Lee was actually sent to a psychiatric hospital to deal with his schizophrenia, where he could have been released at the earliest in 2012, just after 3 years. However, he wasn't released that early just because his mental state didn't quite improve that fast. In the aftermath of the murder, Greyhound pulled an advertising campaign with the slogan, "There's a reason you've never heard of bus rage." Within the year of Tim McLean's murder, and this bit is actually disgusting, like I was infuriated when I read this. So Peter, this with the little rabbit thing, you know, that like vegan, cruelty-free, like charity, is it a charity? Peter attempted to run an advertising campaign comparing the murder of Tim McLean to the consumption of animals. Obviously, everywhere where Peter tried to air this advert, so on like websites and in magazines, they all refused to publish it for obvious reasons. It was such a horrific lack of respect and sensitivity towards Tim McLean and his family. In 2011, two female passengers of that Greyhound bus decided to file a lawsuit against Greyhound, the police, and the Canadian government for psychological damage because they were exposed to this murderer carrying the head for so long. Like I said, police could have gone in and tried to stop him and like killed him or tasered him inside the bus and arrested him, but instead they left everyone outside for hours just watching him do this, waiting for him to calm down. And so they were claiming that they shouldn't have done that. They should have tried to stop him because now they're psychologically damaged. Both women were seeking $3 million each. However, 4 years later, in 2015, both women mysteriously dropped their lawsuits at the exact same time. In 2012, so 4 years after the murder, Vincent Lee was thought to be well enough to have unsupervised day trips outside of the psychiatric ward, 4 years after he had murdered and cannibalised a stranger. 5 years after the murder, in July of 2014, one of the first police officers that was at the scene that day actually took his life, because he struggled from PTSD so bad from what he'd seen on that day that he just could not carry on. Then in February of 2016, 7 years after murdering and cannibalising a man on a bus in front of a huge audience, Vincent Lee was allowed out of his psychiatric unit. He is completely free and has a new name now. He still lives in Canada, but obviously Canada is a huge place and I don't know exactly where in Canada he lives, but his name is Will Baker and he now has no criminal record at all, which I just find infuriating. I understand that he was not criminally responsible because of his mental illness, but he still did it. He still murdered and cannibalized a man, and that should be on his criminal record. It just worries me in situations like that. If they don't put it on the criminal record, how do they know that he is 100% better? Obviously, they've got professionals that have looked at him and agree that he's better, but if he's not, and then he also doesn't have a criminal record, then we're just back to square one. But yeah, that's the end of this case. Thank you so much for listening to Usual Disclaimer. At this point, I just want to say that if you've been affected by any of the topics we discussed today, please check the description where we've left some helpful resources. If you want to hear more cases like this one, make sure to follow Usual Disclaimer on your podcast app so that you get notifications when we post new episodes. And if you really enjoyed, I'd love it if you could leave a rating and a review too. Usual Disclaimer with Eleanor Neal is an Audio Boom Studios production. See you next time.